For marketing agencies and social media managers looking to prove the value of their work, I've got something special for you. Agora Pulse is not only Social Media Examiner's tool of choice as an all-in-one social media management tool, it also allows you to track the traffic, conversion, and revenue from every social post, comment, and private message. Learn how to prove your social media ROI with a free training or a free trial by visiting agorapulse.com/SME today. Again, agorapulse.com/SME.
Welcome to the Social Media Marketing Podcast, helping you navigate the social media jungle. And now, here is your host, Michael Stelzner.
Hello. Thank you so much for joining me for the Social Media Marketing Podcast, brought to you by Social Media Examiner. I'm your host, Michael Stelzner, and this is the podcast for marketers and business owners who want to know how to navigate the ever-changing marketing jungle. Today, I'm going to be joined by Ben Angel, and we're going to explore how to remain relevant in a world that's getting changed by artificial intelligence. I know so many of you that are listening are concerned and might even be being disrupted by artificial intelligence. I hope that today's interview will be really helpful for you. By the way, I'm at Stelzner on Facebook and at Mike_Stelzner on Twitter/X. If you're new to this podcast, be sure to follow this show so you don't miss any of our future content. Let's transition over to this week's interview with Ben Angel.
Helping you to simplify your social safari. Here is this week's expert guide.
Today, I'm very excited to be joined by Ben Angel. If you don't know who Ben is, you got to know Ben. He is the author of Unstoppable, and his latest book is The Wolf is at the Door, How to Survive and Thrive in an AI-Driven World. His podcast is called Beyond Unstoppable, and his course is 28 Days to AI Mastery. Ben, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Mike, it's amazing to be here. I have been a fan of Social Media Examiner for so long now. It's unbelievable to speak to you.
Well, I'm excited you're here. Today, Ben and I are going to explore how to remain relevant in the emerging AI world that is rapidly changing as we are recording this. But before we go there, Ben, I would love to hear a little bit of your backstory. How'd you get into AI? Start wherever you want to start.
Sure. So yeah, for those wondering, the accent is Australian. So I'm from Australia, South Australia. I've been in Florida for about 6 or 7 years now, I think. But when I was actually 23, and I'm celebrating 20 years now in this past week, when I was 23, I actually launched B2B networking events in Melbourne, Australia. So yeah, every single month, we would have 50 to 100 plus people show up, and I would interview a particular guest at the time. So this was before podcasting was a thing. We would cover everything from social media marketing, technology specifically, as well as website development. So when it comes to artificial intelligence, it almost feels like I'm coming home to a large degree. My last book was actually on biohacking, but anything I do kind of fits under the umbrella of entrepreneurship. And it was at the start of last year, I put out a video of being a contributor for entrepreneur.com for, I think, over 8 years now, and they're my publisher for the last two books. I put out a video called The Dark Side of ChatGPT because I saw a lot of business owners kind of jumping into the AI space but not being fully aware of what these changes actually mean down the line. It's the current focus is, I can write an email campaign in seconds. Not, is my business going to be replaced by AI in the next few years? What do I need to do to adapt to that? So when I put the video out, it blew up, had over 3 million views. And I was actually contracted to Entrepreneur to write a book on superhuman focus at the time. And after the video blew up, I rang them up and said, we've got to change the book. And we made a very rapid pivot towards artificial intelligence, but specifically looking at the more longer term consequences, not just how to use it. The course that I run, that's kind of how to use it alongside of, okay, what are businesses unaware of right now? And really in this space, it's like one side is all rainbows and unicorns and the other side is, hey, there are serious concerns that we have for the future of the economy.
So just a little bit more on the backstory. So you've written at least two books that I'm aware of, possibly more. Unstoppable, you said it was on biohacking. Is that right?
Yeah.
And what is biohacking, just for people that don't understand what that is?
Yeah, so biohacking is optimizing every aspect of your psychology and biology to really achieve peak performance. And at the time, I approached Entrepreneur and said, I have an idea for this book. I want to go on a 90-day mission to biohack my way back to health, because I was having serious mental health issues and I wasn't getting any answers from doctors. And that brought me over to the US to meet with neuroscientists, doctors, gut microbiome experts. And I did have to say to the publisher at the time, I don't know what the final chapter of this book is going to be, because I don't know if I'm going to be successful. I count myself very lucky working with Entrepreneur, because they really jumped at the idea. And they also jumped at the idea with this book, The Wolf is at the Door, which is kind of out there for a lot of business books in the nonfiction space. So this marks my eighth book.
So I remember watching a documentary with, I think, the guy that plays Thor on Disney Plus. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
Yeah. What's his name?
Is it Chris something? Hemsworth?
Chris Hemsworth. There you go.
Yes. And it was very similar kind of concepts, right? Where he was talking to people all around the world about how to essentially sleep better and how to basically just get his body in shape. Is that kind of what we're talking about?
Yeah, we actually dove in really deep. We ended up surveying over 70,000 people as part of this project. And each of those individuals answered 30 questions. So the way that I look at biohacking is it's a coin. On one side, we have psychology. On the other side, we have biology. Coming from the personal development field, which I have done over my career, is that I found, especially in entrepreneurship, everyone's focused on psychology. So back in 2018, when I was trying to get to the root of my depression, there were no kind of major issues, things were going well. I thought, okay, well, if I can't change it with psychology, what's the underlying biology doing? How is that actually influencing how I behave and act? And that Unstoppable kind of blew up here in the US with, I think it was over 80,000 copies, and it just ticks away. I'm incredibly proud of the lives that that book has changed, because it met people where they were. It wasn't just another, you know, self-help book, you just need to be positive. It's like, no, you have the right to feel if your biology is in this state, then psychology is only going to get you so far until you fix that underlying issue. And it was an incredible journey. I got to try supplements, wearable technology as well that has been used by the military, and experimented in ways that I never thought I would. So it's just, yeah, an incredible project.
Well, it's really fascinating, because you went from trying out a lot of fascinating processes and technical innovations to this new world where we're in this AI space, right? And we've got a lot of tech here that's making things possible. But you called your book The Wolf is at the Door. So just give us a little bit about, like, what's the premise of the book?
The premise of the book, we actually open up with the story of Little Red Riding Hood. And there was a particular story that happened. It was January of last year, I believe, with a Canadian couple. It was a Canadian grandmother. She received a telephone call who was supposedly from her grandson, Brandon. And Brandon was in a panic. He was supposedly in prison. He didn't have his wallet. He didn't have his phone. That's why he was calling from a different phone number. And he needed thousands of dollars to get him out of bail. So Ruth went to the bank with her husband, withdrew, I think it was $3,000. This is in Saskatchewan, Canada. And this is a real story. And it wasn't until the second bank that the bank manager realized that this could have been a scam. And it was revealed later that it was an artificially generated voice. And within a week of hearing that story and including it in the book, I actually spoke to a neighbor, and his grandson, who's autistic, someone had cloned his voice to try and scam his parents out of money because he was in a care facility. And it was interesting, because I was thinking about Little Red Riding Hood. You have the grandma, you have the grandson, not the granddaughter in this scenario. But the term The Wolf is at the Door is something that I heard growing up. I grew up on a cattle farm. It was 5,000 acres, so a large property in South Australia. And one thing, I mean, we experienced 7 years of drought, so no income coming in at all. So if you want to talk about adaptability, speak to a farmer. They're the most adaptable people in the world. So I witnessed from a very young age my dad adapting and pivoting, but there was always this phrase that I heard occasionally, which was the wolf is at the door, which meant the bank manager was coming out to visit us so we could restructure the loans. And then my dad obviously had to do his pitch to go, okay, here's what we've got lined up in the coming years. But supposedly it comes out of the Great Depression in the late 1920s, where millions of New Yorkers were put out of work. The reason I chose that title was, I think, part intuition. I didn't think of any other titles at the time, which is very unusual for me. I mean, I've done a lot of writing in my life. I always come up with 20 or 30 titles first. This one was just instant. It just clicked. But the reason is because there is a sense of urgency that we're facing right now, that things are changing so rapidly. 1 week in the tech space is almost the equivalent of 10 years worth of change in the normal world. And almost every day in the last month, there are these developments that are occurring that will impact businesses in ways that they can't even imagine yet or haven't even considered. They're very much seeing the rainbows and unicorns going, oh my God, I can do 100 times more things faster than ever before, which is amazing, not realizing that your clients can also clone you as an individual and bypass you entirely, which is something that we can kind of dive into during this interview.
For sure. We're going to get into some of the risks that marketers need to be aware of. But before we go there, there are plenty of people listening to this podcast that are not paying attention to artificial intelligence. Some of them are marketers, some of them are creators, entrepreneurs. They, for whatever reason, have just ignored it. Why do you think they should pay attention?
It's changing the entire landscape. If we go back to 2020 during the pandemic, I think it was a month prior to the pandemic occurring that I saw Italy had actually shut down. And it was on that particular day that I read that news story. I had a team meeting later in the evening. And I said to my team, I said, look, this is bad. It's a high probability that the US is going to shut. We need to act and behave as though we're not going to have any income for the next year. And let's act now. And a month later, that did occur. If I hadn't have taken that step, my business never would have survived. And there's a lot of complacency, I think, in the realm of artificial intelligence at the moment. And what we saw within my business was in February, it had done over $170,000 in online course sales for my Unstoppable program. After the pandemic shutdown, within a month, it had dropped down to less than $10,000. Talk about whiplash. But thankfully, because I'd taken those steps, and I want to be clear, my team thought I was crazy. They're like, what are you talking about? It's never going to happen. And I think that scenario is a litmus test for how people are going to respond in the years moving forward. And I would encourage people to reflect on how they reacted during the pandemic. In The Wolf is at the Door, there's actually subtext to each chapter, which is different stages of grief. So the first chapter is shock, and then we kind of move into denial and depression and all the other stages to get people through to hope. And I think how we behaved during the pandemic, were you in, say, denial that it was occurring like my teammates were? Or was it shock that you didn't know what to do or didn't know what to turn? You were too late on pivoting. If we take a look at that and go, all right, how am I going to do things differently? Because the pandemic is the most recent event in living history that provides us with the tools that we need for the next few years.
So what I really hear you say is that we are going to have a similar kind of experience with AI. Whether we have it or not, we should prepare for it. And that's, I think, a great transition into the next question, which let's talk about some of the risks that marketers might not be thinking of when it comes to artificial intelligence.
The biggest first risk is the copyright. And what we've seen, for those who are unaware of this, is the New York Times is suing OpenAI and Microsoft for copyright infringement. Supposedly what's occurred, and I'm not sure if you've had a chance to read the actual documents, it's quite a fascinating read, but what the New York Times breaks down is the specific content the ChatGPT was trained on. And it's very clear, like the New York Times brought receipts, whereas in other lawsuits around copyright infringement, they haven't been as detailed as what the New York Times has been. I suspect that there is going to be a high likelihood that they could succeed. Now, this has huge implications for how AI is going to unfold. This could potentially open the floodgates for a lot of lawsuits, could literally shut down a lot of AI models that are here in the US alone. The reason that I bring that up for businesses is that AI hallucinates. So it combines fact with fiction and it shares it with authority. So you don't necessarily know what you're actually sharing or if it's accurate, even though it sounds accurate. And the other facet of this is that I see a lot of businesses using copyright to help with their clients' work, not being aware of the fact that they could be unknowingly plagiarizing other work, presenting it to the client, saying that it's yours, and then that client getting in trouble later down the line.
So just to be crystal clear, because I think I've grasped this, but I want to make sure everybody in my audience has. If you use AI to create content, you could be infringing on someone else's copyright. That's what I'm hearing you say, right?
100%. And the other factor involved in this is, as it stands right now here in the US, you cannot copyright AI-generated work.
Right.
To copyright something, it has to be created by a human, not a machine. And there was a court case that this got tested with last year. The artist hadn't changed the graphic design enough for it to be considered human-generated. Now, if businesses are working with clients and they're producing graphic images using AI or copy using AI, you have to ask yourself, does that client require copyright to protect themselves? And copyright, I think, is a really, it's not being discussed enough. And to give you an example, in 2018, when I did release Unstoppable, another author actually released a book with the same title on the same day as my release date. I'd actually done almost a year build up to this book. We'd released the cover. I'd been doing like weekly documentaries of this story. And the book cover itself was almost exactly the same as my book. And it was very clear that this author had done this strategically to benefit off of all of the coverage that we'd had in Entrepreneur Magazine and on the website. And at the time, their attorney decided, hey, it's okay for now. But when it became a problem was when I started scaling up my Facebook ads, and we were spending almost $100,000 a month on Facebook ads at one time. Readers of this other author's book started calling me a scam artist, saying that I'd ripped off his book, not being aware of the backstory. Now, the attorney for my publisher rang up that author. That book cover was changed within less than 24 hours. I do not know how much money I lost as a result of that author taking advantage of that. But if it wasn't for copyright and the ability to protect myself, all of that money funneled into ads would have continually built up his business. And I think people really underestimate this and think, well, everything's borrowed from someone else. But if you look at the schooling system, authors, for example, they get paid, they get their books bought in bulk for the schooling system. We're also taught to use citations, so the originator of that work is credited, and that they're also rewarded. And moving forward, I think businesses do need to be fiercely protective of their information. And I'm not really seeing that concern in the business sector yet.
Did you know that we can deliver awesome marketing info directly into your inbox? Simply subscribe to our weekly newsletter that comes out 3 days a week. You won't miss any of the updates going on in the world of social marketing. visit socialmediaexaminer.com/getupdates. I want to ask about AI agents, because this is something we were talking about when we were prepping, and not everybody understands what these things are and how they could be a threat.
AI agents are amazing, and they're also absolutely terrifying. So an AI agent can act autonomously without human intervention. You may give it a task to achieve a certain goal, and then it will go out and it will take all of those steps by itself and also trouble each of those steps as it moves through the process. Now, we saw a case, I think it was just a couple of months ago, a tech guy, he let an AI agent take over his computer. And it was terrifying to watch, because he gave it one command, all of a sudden you're seeing it open up Google Chrome, then it's going to YouTube, searching for a specific video, transcribing that video. On the other hand, I mean, it sounds amazing. On the other hand, I mean, how many of us have his banking information stored in our browsers in saved passwords that it just has to hit a button to get across? And there is a huge push for AI agents specifically within OpenAI, and we're going to see them kind of more infiltrate the space within the next year, because that is the true definition of AI replacing humans, being able to work through those complex tasks to achieve that final outcome.
Well, and it's exciting, as you said, and also crazy, right? Because there's a lot of knowledge work that we might do right now with people that work for our business, right? Which might involve going out and looking at YouTube analytics and then pulling that data and putting it in a spreadsheet and then generating a report. This kind of information will be unquestionably done by agents in the future, which means that if you do this kind of work that's kind of meaningless, go here, check this, document this kind of work here, you probably need to find a different line of work. That's really what I think is coming. Don't you agree?
I agree. And I also think we have to be careful with the meaningless thing, because by definition, and this actually came up in the letter that was part of the petition that occurred early last year and tech experts trying to get AI companies to slow down, we're effectively allowing the technology industry to define what is meaningful or meaningless.
Right. Okay, that's good.
And the other aspect of that is we're allowing unelected tech leaders to shape the entire world without us having an active say in it currently. And I say currently because AI regulation, we're starting to see it really hit. There was the European AI Act that was announced, I think it was March 23. I think that comes into effect in a couple of months' time. There was an announcement here in the US with the government having to actually look at what are all of these issues that are going to be caused in all of these different government sectors. So it really brings up a lot of existential questions. And writing this book, it broke my brain. There were many times that I wanted to stop. And one of the biggest ones that it raises, and it doesn't matter what business you're in, is that what is my purpose if AI can do my job faster, smarter, cheaper, and quicker than I can?
Yeah, and this is a great transition into my next question. There are lots of other risks that we have not talked about. Like, for example, some businesses, which we won't get into, are restricting, as you told me before we hit recording, the use of AIs when they enter into a contractual relationship with an employee or a contractor. You've also got, obviously, these hallucination things, which we really didn't dig in on, but basically the AI can just make stuff up. And if you take that as the gospel, quote unquote, you could look like a fool. And there's been so many stories of attorneys that have used fake cases and all this kind of stuff. We're not going to go into any of that, but I want to get to this existential challenge, right? Which is, how is AI going to change our jobs and our careers? And how ought we like process that? Because inevitably it's coming, right?
Yeah, it's already occurring. I think we're just on the tipping point of seeing the full impacts. I do bring up the grieving process in the book because I think it's not just important to process this strategically, we also have to process it emotionally. This isn't a small little change that's occurring. And I think it's important for people to recognize, go, where am I in the grieving process in relationship to AI? Am I in shock? And to let people know that I'm in shock almost every other week as I'm reading through these other developments. Like, the goal is to remain in hope, right? Hope and acceptance. But we have to process all of these developments to even get to that point overall.
How do we do that? Because, you know, not everybody here understands what you understand, because you've gone through this and you understand this. Like, there are people out there that are freaking out. Like, what exactly do you want to say to them?
First of all, I want to acknowledge what they're going through, because it's certainly, it was an experience that I had during this book in certain aspects of, I would typically consider myself a techno-optimist with my 20-year background in covering technology. But it didn't matter how I tried to look at things logically, I kept on hitting certain roadblocks. And I think it's important for people, the only way to let go of an emotion is to acknowledge that it exists in the first place. And I think there's a lot of underlying anxiety in the business sector at the moment as to what all this really means. So first of all, I would say acknowledge it. The second, more information. And that is, as we'll talk about in a little bit, AI literacy, educating yourself on all of the developments that are occurring so you can sit down and then make a plan based on logic, not being told a certain thing from an investor of an AI company saying that it's going to give us a four-day work week. My first thought when I read that, it's like, okay, but are the companies going to pay people for a five-day work week, or is it going to force people to get two jobs?
Yeah.
So there are a lot of questions that aren't being asked. So I'd encourage those who are experiencing fear, sit down, write your questions out, and apply critical thinking to it.
Okay, so for those that maybe are not yet educated enough to understand how this is going to change their career and their jobs, like, what's your take on how, if we look forward, let's say 2 years, how is the career world and the job world for this audience that I'm targeting, how's it going to change?
It's going to be industry specific. There is no answer that anyone could give right now that is going to give any type of security, which is a disappointing thing to say after having written this book, because we each have to, it has to be incumbent on each of us to break this down and look at what is the actual impact. But what I can tell you is why it's actually occurring, which is even more important at this point. Why it's occurring is because of the democratization of information. And at the start of, I think it was the start of last year, Gary Vee, love him. I think he's incredible. But in one of his events, he got up and he said, you know, you shouldn't fear it. AI is just like a tractor. And I almost choked on my coffee, because I grew up on a farm, you know, it's riding tractors. I think when we experienced drought in our family, that was the same year that I was born. So my first ride on a tractor was when I was in an infant and my mom was driving the tractor. So that analogy, for example, if we expand upon it, if AI is the tractor, then knowledge is our crop. Then who is the farmer? And the way that Gary was presenting it was that we're each the farmer attending to our field of knowledge with our AI tractor. But what we're starting to see more and more, especially this year, is AI companies are bypassing, they're the actual farmer using the tractor, the AI, to actually sweep up our crop of information.
Right.
We're getting bypassed. And we've even seen it in the last few weeks. I believe it's the company Automattic, who own Reddit as well as WordPress. They did a multi-million dollar deal with OpenAI for OpenAI to purchase users' content to train their AI model on. The reason I bring up this democratization is that when the tractor was introduced, farmhands were let go. But that didn't mean that the work stopped. There was more work and it had to be done at a faster pace. That work actually fell to the children in these farms, including myself. But that was unpaid work. And this scenario is already playing out, is that authors, creators, they are creating content and they are not being cited or paid for it by any means. And there are a lot of people out there that will say regulation will stifle innovation. But we saw that with Microsoft and IBM, there was a research paper done on this a few years ago, that regulation not only benefited consumers, it also benefited those companies, on top of paving the way for companies like Google and Meta to exist. And I believe that if regulation is implemented, then these models are going to have to adjust their approach to pay for the content that they need it to be trained on. And the reason that that's going to become even more essential in the years moving forward is that researchers have found that when AI is trained on AI-generated content, it goes mad. And that's the researchers' words, not mine. They found it actually breaks the model down because it's retraining it as it's been interacted with, which means that the AI companies constantly require fresh new content. And I'm excited about regulation because I think it's going to bring about some balance, because at the minute they're scraping up every piece of content on the internet and they're repurposing it and selling it off without citing the original creator. And any business owner is a creator. I don't care who you are. You're a creator of the content, whether a proprietary, whether a copyright. The reason that you derive an income is because of your information. So you need to protect your crop.
I want to add some thoughts on this because I have thoughts on this. We're starting to see social platforms requiring a login. And for example, Facebook, Twitter, and all the social platforms will probably eventually lock everything down to registered users only, because they understand that all that insight, all that data that you've been publishing on the social platforms, all those videos on Instagram, all those text posts on LinkedIn, those are all potentially in the past publicly scrapable by Google and every other source that's out there. And because what Ben is saying is true, knowledge is the gold. Right? So the gold rush right now is all about information. So if you have the largest repository in the world of images, like maybe Getty Images does, and you've allowed systems like DALL-E to scrape that, you're going to want to lock that down, right? So that basically they have to license that information from you. And same thing with your written word, right? Like Ben, you and I both know, because we're authors, that there's a good chance that some of our work is out there in a repository, in a public works kind of setting, and the AIs probably have read at least one of our books and probably know all about what's in that book and probably could write another book from it, right? So it is really a shift for marketers, because in the olden days, it was give it all away for free because Google will drive you traffic. That was how it all went, right? And now all of a sudden we're entering into this era. We're only not even a year and a half into the ChatGPT era, where people are starting to wrap their heads around the fact that their knowledge, their written word, their spoken word, their videos are assets. And they're starting to see terms of service changes in their inbox, Ben. I'm seeing it from these major companies. And if you read the fine print, they're basically saying, if you use our platform, you're giving us the right to use your information, right?
In perpetuity as well.
Perpetuity. Forever. Yes.
Perpetuity.
Yes.
And I've seen that popping up with the CRM systems.
Yeah. Salesforce, everything else. Yeah.
They're pretty shocking. And the reason that they're doing that is currently some of those platforms will be using ChatGPT's API, but the goal is to obviously develop their own tailored solution in which they can own and they're able to benefit from. But you bring up something really important. Like, as an author sitting down, and this kind of reflects into the marketing space as well, first thing I realized was, okay, people are going to accuse me of using AI to write this book. Okay, step number one, I need to completely change my writing style. The second thing was that someone's going to try and use my book and train an AI on it to produce potentially workbooks or whatever. And we've seen that happen to dozens of authors in the past year. So one thing that I did, and I don't know if it works or not, but it was just my theory, but in the very final chapter of this book, there's actually a dream sequence that is fictional that ties in all of the first 10 chapters of the book. And the stories throughout the book weave in and weave out. There are a lot of factors in this book that would confuse an AI model. With the inclusion of that final chapter, there are also certain clues kind of scattered throughout this book that the AI just wouldn't make any sense of. So as an author, like the other subtext to this book is specifically for marketers to look at and go, okay, why did Ben do that? Like he was talking about something, kind of felt like he trailed off and segued, but then he comes back to it. And that kind of really brings us back to the topic of engagement and getting people engaged in our work again and further refining our skills. And you bring up an incredible point is that we are looking at a potentially more closed internet than what we've had, that people are going to attempt to protect their content behind paywalls. How successful that's going to be, I really don't know. Because with the New York Times lawsuit, they're alleging that OpenAI trained on paywall-protected content. And it's critical that we start to have this conversation now because there's a window of hope and opportunity for public opinion to sway where this goes and to actually ask companies, whoever you do business with, I mean, we each probably have 10 or 20 platforms that we use for business that we're subscribed to, actually reach out to them to ask, are you using my content to train your AI model? Is there an opt-out? Do I actually get that option or is it automatically opt-in? And I think every single AI model should be opt-in. You have to opt in to allow them to train your content. Right now, the whole trend is you have to ask to opt out. I think we're going to see public opinion switch that on its head, hopefully by the end of this year.
Now, I should clarify, we are referring to generative AI, which is one of many different kinds of artificial intelligence in today's interview, which is the process of generating something new and original from existing works. And there's a lot of other uses of AI that are very valuable for us as marketers, like analyzing, sorting, the kind of things that aren't necessarily generating original copyrighted works, but they're just doing tasks, completing sentences. Like we all probably love it when it predicts the next word for us, right? Like these are useful uses of AI that are not what we're talking about. We're really talking about the generation of original content on the back of existing content. Would you agree with that, Ben?
100%. And it's that original content that sets us apart. And we're now entering a phase where that original content isn't protected.
Yeah, exactly.
The laws currently aren't being upheld because AI companies aren't being forthright with the data that it's trained on. And for good reason, they would get sued for millions of dollars if we all actually knew.
Right, exactly. How can we, as marketers, entrepreneurs, creators, what can we do to remain relevant in a world that is seeming to make us irrelevant?
It's a big question. The first step, I would say, is everyone requires some form of AI literacy. Now, AI literacy is going to constantly evolve in terms of what it means and what it means to you, the listener that's listening to this podcast.
What does it mean to you?
It's a very broad subject in that it means understanding the capabilities of AI is the very first step. And I've been personally shocked at a lot of businesses not realizing that AI agents are coming and can quickly replace their business services. So I think the first step, and this is where people are going to hit that first stage of grief shock when they're aware of it. But let me be clear, you can't adapt to something that you don't understand. And most people are trying to adapt to something that they have no idea what is actually going to unfold. So for me, AI literacy is sitting down, looking at all of the capabilities, but getting really industry specific. If you're an agency, a marketing agency, for example, then being aware that companies are adding to contracts that you can't use AI because they're worried that their proprietary data, their trade secrets is going to show up in another model, which has happened to Amazon, by the way. It has occurred. We're not just, you know, prophesizing that it's going to happen. It has actually occurred. If you're not aware that companies may do that, you may put on your website that you're integrating AI and you can do your work faster, not realizing that that could be a negative point. The second thing for companies to be aware of is public sentiment. Right now, I think the last research that I saw that asked people what their thoughts were on artificial intelligence found that 53% of the population are more concerned than excited about AI. And I think that was up over 10 points from the year prior. I think that's going to continue to grow. And if you're actively flashing that you're using AI for everything, then you could be inadvertently putting yourself out of business that way. So get industry specific, be aware of the hallucinations, understand what are the next stages. So we have AI agents. Also understand what prompt chaining is. If you are going to deploy it in your business, I recommend you learn this technique, which is, you know how we have maybe a big ambitious goal and we break it down into smaller little chunks? Most people with AI, they'll ask it to write me a 1,000-word article on, say, social media marketing, cover these four topics. That's it. It's all within one request. Prompt chaining is breaking it down into step one, conduct research in this particular space, provide citations, ask for it to provide citations. I checked with ChatGPT just the other day for it to provide citations. It didn't, but what it did instead was just to mention where the research had come from without any backlinks whatsoever. And for those of us that, you know, are building our business off of organic search, that's a big problem because it directly bypasses our websites. The other skill that I recommend is diversification. You have to be prepared for the unexpected to occur, which is rule number one in the book, expect the unexpected. You have to be able to diversify potentially your products or services. So if one service gets hit by AI, you have another one that you could introduce or pivot to relatively quickly. The next step I would suggest is to conduct a SWOT analysis. And we've got business leaders conducting them right now in our online program to sit down and compare your own skills to the skills and capabilities of artificial intelligence to get a better understanding of what your strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats are. And it's quite a sobering activity, to be honest with you, when you realize, oh, okay, I can't just fly through with what I've been doing anymore. I need to elevate my offering to a whole nother level, which means that I'm going to have to change my entire approach to business.
I love this. So what's your thoughts about personal branding? Because I know you also had some thoughts on that too.
Yeah, I first was speaking about personal branding way back in 2009. And when I was writing this book, I realized I was reflecting a lot on my career over the past 20 years to look at what were the key moments in my life that I pivoted, and personal branding was one of them. The reason that I covered personal branding at the time was because the internet was opening up a worldwide marketplace. It was kind of really just starting to flourish at that point in time. And my concern for businesses were, okay, you're not just competing with the business down the road. You're competing with the US. You're competing with China. You're competing with Canada. How are you going to differentiate yourself from all of these other marketers? Which is where personal branding came in. To me, personal branding is self-expression amplified to influence and command attention. So it's amplified. Now, this is one of those catch-22s, as with everything in artificial intelligence, that we're seeing AI becoming more effective at mimicking people. And this is why I think business owners are soon going to realize that we all need regulation to just exist. There was just in Tennessee, they introduced the Elvis Act, which is to make sure that they hold the copyright, the ownership over their own image, likeness, and sound to prevent these models from cloning them. I think we all need to be aware of it. But moving into personal branding, we need to sit down and look at who am I at this point in my life? Because things are changing rapidly. Who do I want to become? And who do I need to become to adapt to this? And that's an even bigger question that we need to ask, because we're going to be forced to step outside of our current window of tolerance and expand our knowledge so we become comfortable with the changes that are occurring. And I see a lot of people speaking about authenticity. Well, I 100% agree with it. But then on one hand, there's also a study came out last year that patients actually preferred the AI nurse or chatbot over an actual conversation with a doctor. Well, I love doctors, but come on, that's not hard. So it's becoming more adept at being able to mimic authenticity. My initial thoughts are we're going to move more to video than written, that we're going to want to see that person in front of us, even though, of course, we can all be cloned. I think more private memberships and private groups with that one-on-one interaction, because it's not just authenticity, it's the way that we deliver authenticity. I think that's the next evolution we're going to face.
Thank you, Ben, first of all, for getting us all to think, because there's a lot to think about here. If people want to connect with you on the socials, do you have a preferred platform? And if they want to learn more about your business, where do you want to send them?
Yeah, sure. So they can head over to YouTube and just search Ben Angel, or visit the website for the book, which is thewolfofai.co.
Thewolfofai.co is not Ben Angel. Ben is helping you be prepared for the wolf, which is at the door. Ben, thanks again for coming on the show and sharing your insights with us.
It's incredible to speak with you.
Hey, if you missed anything, we took all the notes for you over at socialmediaexaminer.com/612. If you're new to the show, be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast app. If you've been a longtime listener, would you let your friends know about this show? I'm at Stelzner on Facebook and at Mike_Stelzner on Twitter. And do check out our other shows, the Marketing Agency Show and the Social Media Marketing Talk Show. This brings us to the end of another episode of the Social Media Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Stelzner. I'll be back with you next week. I hope you make the best out of your day, and may your marketing keep evolving.
The Social Media Marketing Podcast is a production of Social Media Examiner.
Want more good stuff? Sign up for our top-notch social marketing newsletter. We deliver it straight into your inbox 3 days a week. Visit socialmediaexaminer.com/getupdates.